walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before I go any further, I want to thank the dynamic duo of Beb Capshaw and Ronnie Elliott, who did a fantastic job filling in for me on last week's show. Bravo. Greatly appreciated. As for today's show, my guest is Susan Weber, founder of Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay, or DRTB, which pursues a multifaceted mission, including plucking Dalmatians from shelters, especially those facing euthanasia, finding adoptive homes for those and other dogs that arrive through various means, and to help in those efforts, DRTB is always looking for folks to foster Dalmatians. In a bit of an unusual twist, Weber, who created DRTB in 2003, now lives in Tucson, running the organization from there, relying on a network of Tampa-based volunteers, including Pat Hose, Tony Wyatt, Mary Ellen Oska, who are all joining me in studio this morning, as are two fabulous Dalmatians, Chip and Snoopy, who are looking for homes. We'll get all into that shortly when I speak with Susan Weber. Pat, Tony, Mary Ellen, and a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also, later in this program, I'll speak briefly with Detective Roxanne Hunt of the Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association, which will be presenting Bark in the Park this Saturday at Freedom Lake Park. Before we talk Dalmatians, though, gotta hear an entirely fitting animal song. This is the Replacements version of Cruella de Vil on Talking Animals.
To take a sudden chill, Cruella, Cruella de Vil. The glare in her look, the eyes in her stare, innocent children, you better beware. The world was such a wholesome place until Cruella, Cruella de Vil. First you think she's a devil, and after time has worn her in a shock, inhuman beast. She ought to be locked up and never released, like a spider for the kill. That's old Cruella, Cruella de Vil.
That was the Replacements with their version of Cruella de Vil, which brings us directly to Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay. In the studio, we have again Pat Hose, Tony Wyatt, Mary Ellen Wuska, and dogs named Chip and Snoopy. And by phone now from Tucson, let's welcome the founder of Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay, Susan Weber. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you very much for having us on.
Oh, absolutely. It's already been fun and nutty, and we've barely even begun. So that's how we like it here at Talking Animals. So just a moment ago, we heard Cruella de Vil, or a version of it. Let me start by asking about the pros and cons of the whole sort of 100 Dalmatians world for the Dalmatian rescue world.
Well, the good news is that 101 Dalmatian movie has basically gone away. And so when I started the rescue in 2003, 100% of the dogs that we were taking in were purebred because everybody was breeding them, everybody wanted them, the movie kept coming out. At this point, 13 years later, less than 30%, probably down to like 20% of the dogs that we're seeing in shelters are purebred Dalmatians.
Wow, that's a pretty striking change. And just while we're on that, and then we'll get into other more direct Dalmatian stuff, but at this point, what does the whole fireman, fire station stereotype mean for things? Good or bad or sort of indifferent?
Well, it's really kind of indifferent. Fire stations today, in most places, cannot have a Dalmatian. You know, Dalmatians were bred originally to be coach dogs to run alongside carriages. They're very high energy, high endurance dogs. They can run 26 miles at a time in one shot. So they're got a lot of energy, and that's why they transferred from being coach dogs to running alongside, you know, fire engines. But most firehouses today can't have them because of health reasons. Other things, although once in a while you do still see a Dalmatian in the firehouse.
I gotcha. All right, so I'm going to take a wild guess and suggest you've been pretty crazy about Dalmatians for most of your life.
Actually, not most of my life.
No?
It wasn't until my mid-30s.
Really?
When I got my first Dalmatian and just fell in love with the breed. As a child, we had mutts and beagles and more mutts. So, yeah, it wasn't until my mid-30s, but the first one that I had, first two that I had, I will say Lady and Tramp, just made me absolutely fall in love with the breed.
Why did I think that, maybe you just made up for lost time, but why did I think at one point there was 20 or so Dalmatians living with you?
There were.
Okay, so it's not as nutty as it sounds. It's just that you were making up for lost time, I guess.
Oh, trust me, it was more than nutty. When we first started the rescue, we were it. I had no website, no volunteers, no anything. So we immediately became a hunting ground for Dalmatians, and we quickly went from, we had 14 dogs of our own, all from shelters, but then we quickly went to close to 30 Dalmatians in our own house.
Wow. So what precipitated founding the Dalmatian Rescue? Because you were sort of already doing basically what made more official and just gave a structure to?
Well, we were getting overrun. The house was being taken over. We had dogs in every room, crates in every room, basically no place to live. So one of the people that adopted from us back then, because I was just doing it word of mouth, said, why don't you start a 501c3? And he actually kind of walked me through doing that. And then the next person that adopted happened to actually create a website for us. And that's what got the ball rolling. And we became, you know, an official rescue, got the word out, started getting donations in, started getting some volunteers. But yeah, at first, when we started it, we had no plan, just wanted to save every dog that we could out there. And, you know, learned a lot the hard way.
Yeah.
But it was all good.
Boy, I'd love to have seen the house when you had it upwards of 30 there. That must have been something. Anyway,
yeah, I've got a photo where basically we had crates everywhere. Yeah. So, not good. But they were all very well taken care of and all happy. We had 2.5 acres. And then we actually moved to a 10-acre property in Brooksville and built a kennel. So then we actually were able to house them and take in more dogs. Part of the problem that we don't have fosters right now, or didn't need fosters as much back then, was because we were taking them all in ourselves on the property. So when we moved from Florida in 2005, then we had to start relying on foster homes.
I got you. So early on, fosters were central to the operation.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest on the phone is Susan Weber, founder of Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay, and she's speaking to us by phone from Tucson, which we'll get into in a moment. And while in studio, I am joined by Susan's colleagues, Pat Hose, Tony Wyatt, Mary Ellen Woska, and two lovely dogs, Chip and Snoopy. And I'm going to turn your guys' mics on, although I'm chiefly at the moment talking with Susan. You guys may have things that various Dalmatian pointers or elaborations or whatever. And then specifically, of course, we'll meet the dogs that are here with us in the studio and hear about them. But don't let you just sit there. Mom, it doesn't seem fair, but with microphones in front of you especially. So, but if you'd like listening, if you'd like to offer a comment or ask questions about Dalmatians, you can call us at 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Okay, so we've kind of heard about the early years, but how does the DRTB operate today? How has the mission and the sort of the operation evolved over those years?
Well, our mission has always been to save as many dogs from euthanization and high-kill shelters as we can. And then we also provide care for life homes for senior dogs or dogs that medically can't be adopted out. So our mission is basically the same. We have been extremely lucky in that we have become a little family, I call it, dysfunctional perhaps, but still a family of sorts. And
we work it out.
Yeah, we work it out. We have fights, we make up, we have more fights, we make up. But basically, we all work together to try to, you know, save as many dogs from high kill shelters as we can. And we pull mostly from Florida, but we have been able to help out in South Carolina. Over the years, Georgia, we've even taken some from as far away as Texas, Alabama. We're just trying to save as many dogs as we can. We try to educate people about, you know, adopting a dog, what it entails, about Dalmatians in general. And I mean, my personal thing is senior dogs. I love to try to promote senior dogs because they're one of the last to get out of shelters.
For sure. They need a boost sometimes. We just had a show not too long ago about a woman who wrote a great book about senior dogs and the joys of adopting them and went across the country and talk to all kinds of people and profile all kinds of dogs and their families. And that's exactly right. Those are some of the best dogs. So it sounds like pretty early on then, plucking the dogs out of a shelter, especially if they were right sort of on the cusp of being euthanized, was a very important part of the operation.
Yes. And actually, Tony can tell you a story. Tony and I go back 13 years, and he's kind of got a cute little story if you'd like to hear it. He was one of my first adopters.
Sure. Tony, go ahead, please.
Which story are we talking about?
Mindy.
There's so many nutty stories here, it's hard to keep track.
I was looking at pictures the other day, and I did the date on it, and she was actually 17, so it was 17 years ago. When I had just put down one of my Dalmatians that was like 14, and I was real upset about it, and I was helping a friend move that lived right around the corner from Susan, and she knew that I was real upset about it, and she said, "Hey, there's a lady that lives right around the corner from me that has at least 50 or 100 Dalmatians in her yard." She said, "You ought to go see about adopting one." And I said, "Sure, that sounds good to me." So, you know, I walk up there. We called Susan, let her know I was on my way, and my sister was with me. We walk up there, and here comes Susan with this beautiful little puppy in her hands. And she says, "Well, as you can tell, I have many Dalmatians in my yard. Please play with them and figure out which one you want." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, what's wrong with the little puppy?" And she said, "Well," she said, "you probably don't want her because she's deaf." And I said, "Yeah, but that's all I've had is deaf Dalmatians."
Really?
Yeah. And I love
going how far back, Tony?
Probably 15 years before that.
Wow. So we're talking about the better part of 30 years, if I'm doing the math right.
Because I'd have Dalmatians in Texas and then moved to Florida with them and everything. But I love deaf Dalmatians. They are specifically dedicated to you. They watch everything that you do. They know when you're talking to them. And you have to talk to them. You can't just give them hand signals. They work with that, but they have to know that you're actually talking to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Important distinction. Yeah.
But anyway, that particular day, I adopted Mindy, my little sweetheart. That I just had to put her down in November last year.
She had a stroke. Sorry.
But she was uh, She was the light of my heart.
So while we're on that, figured this, obviously you asked this at some point, but now's as good a time as any. Why don't we ask Susan, you, and Pat, and Mary Ellen each to sort of talk about what, for those of us who haven't had the pleasure so far, at least, of living with a Dalmatian, what do you like most? What are the traits that kind of have really endeared you the most about these dogs?
Well, for me, I mean, they're just such large characters. I mean, I crack up.
Big personality.
Big personalities. Yeah. I crack up every time. I mean, some are very active. Others are just couch potatoes.
Yeah, there's a perception, I think, amongst the people who, again, haven't lived with them, maybe, that they are kind of high-strung and kind of...
Right.
But it sounds like that's the case for some of them,
huge
but not necessarily...
Continuum
yeah,
of
as with any
behaviors.
Breed, I suppose, or mixed breed. Yeah.
I mean, what brought me into rescue was my heart dog, a Dalmatian, was reaching the end of his time, and I knew that, you know, I needed another dog to keep going. I always knew that I was going to drift towards rescue. Little did I know that, you know, I was going to fall into it the way that I have.
Yeah, all the way, right? Yeah.
But... You know, it's, I don't know, there's just something about them that is very loving and very challenging.
Mm-hmm. When you say challenging, what do you mean there?
Well, just keeping up with them, you know.
And
they
make
me think each day a little bit okay, what do I need to do? What can I do for them? You know, what are they going to do today? What are they going to get into today? They make me get out and go play ball. Yeah.
And is it everybody's experience? I found interesting what Tony mentioned about that you whatever else you're doing, you have to actually speak with them and sort of engage in that way.
Yeah, they're
Go ahead,
Mary Ellen.
They're very social animals, and unless you're willing to, one, exercise them on a regular basis, because they're very high. I found the ones that I have owned are high energy.
Okay.
But they're very intelligent. They do want to please you, and they're very social. So they want to be with you or your family, and they want to be involved in those activities. So as long as you're willing to make that commitment, then and that is the right dog for you, most people that have Dals never want any other breed.
Yeah.
Because they are very unique. They're highly intelligent, but they are athletic, and they need to get that energy out. So
that sounds like, if you're looking for kind of somebody who's going to hang on the couch, that is not the dog for
Although
you.
Although we have senior Dals that would fit
I see.
And
yeah.
They're very loving.
Okay.
And you do get
couch
that.
Potatoes.
Yeah. Okay. And Susan, as someone who had, I guess, at one point upwards of 30, I guess you're a particularly good person to ask, like, what is it about Dalmatians that spoke to you and obviously still speaks to you now?
Well, I think what I'm going to talk about what they all said, and I will say the same thing. I'm a type A personality. Obviously, I have to be to deal with that many dogs. Dals are kind of a type A personality. You know, they are very energetic. They do keep you entertained. They're also very stubborn dogs, another trait that I have myself, and they say that our dogs mirror us. But they are stubborn. A lot of people think that Dalmatians are dumb. And I found out very quickly, they're not dumb. They just choose to listen when they want to listen. And when they don't want to listen, they will just up and walk away.
I like that. I've been known to do a little selective listening myself.
And they're great at it. We call them Velcro dogs because they are so, so attached to their owners. And you either love that or you hate that. They will be on your lap, by your side all the time. One thing I do want to say about the deafness, because a lot of people come up and say, oh, aren't they all deaf? And it's actually only 10% that are deaf, and that's either totally deaf or unilaterally deaf in one ear. So it's not that big of a percent, but they are out there, and the gene is active in the white gene.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Just among the reasons that it's great to do shows like this, because I think a lot of people would figure, not being as steeped in the world as any of you guys are, that the deafness is much more common than 10%. So,
yeah, and it's really not. It's actually called the piebald gene, but it is the white, you know, the white coat.
And it depends on the breeding, too. If you have a dog with a deaf gene, 30% of the litter can be deaf or more. So, good breeding, appropriate breeding makes a huge difference.
Right, and the flip side of that, I guess, Susan, you were saying early on about when you first got into the Dalmatian world, and again, maybe in the wake of 101 Dalmatians, maybe influencing that, but how many were pure breeds and how that's really shifted over the years. So what kind of mixes are most common when we do see Dalmatian mixes? What are they mixed with?
For
what
us,
else do we see?
You know,
lots
of we
things.
Take...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, most of the mixes that we take in are Dalmatian pointers. We take in a lot of Dal pits.
Dal pits, is that what you said? Okay,
yes,
cool.
Dal pit mixes.
Okay.
And they make excellent, excellent dogs. I know there's a lot of people that don't believe that, but we have placed so many into wonderful, loving homes that absolutely adore those dogs. Dal Lab. We've taken some Dal Labs.
Oh, wow.
Pat, do you want to add to that? Because Pat keeps track of all of ours.
A lot of them are mixed with the bully breeds. We've had a few that are boxers. I mean, it's pretty much anything that produces spots. If it's white, it has spots, they call us.
I'm pretty simple.
You know, it's a dog life, so we go for it, you know, as much as we can. The fosters that we have, please come foster for us.
I guess we should mention that, as we already heard, that foster has always been important to Dalmatian Rescue Tampa Bay, but it seems like at the moment there's kind of particular another effort to really see if we can drum up some foster homes. So maybe this is a good time then to meet our in-studio dogs. So Pat, do you want to first tell us a little bit about Chip?
Well, Chip is a dog that we brought out of Panama City. He was in a home that financially was a little bit strapped. Had a lot of small children. The mother was a little bit nervous about his energy, some of his demeanor. So instead of being able to address issues and get him the training that he needed, he ended up in the backyard all the time. Did not help him at all. So we brought him down here. We're looking for a home for him where he can be an only dog, maybe. Where he can get a lot of attention, where he can get a lot of exercise, some training, and I think he'll be a wonderful dog. He does stress a little bit. He's still a work in progress, but he's a good boy. So, you know, we're working on him. He is a purebred. He came from a litter out of a non-reputable breeder. Was taken from his mother when he was 4 weeks old, so he didn't get the full socialization that, you know, puppies should have. Puppies need to be kept with their mother at least to 8 weeks.
And this is, you were telling me a little bit before we went on air, that this was kind of the upshot of a puppy mill situation.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. The minute the dog had the litter and could wean it, they were being rebred over and over again. You know, he's the only survivor from that litter, so didn't have a good start.
Right. But with the right home, with the right loving home, and it sounds like he would need to be the only dog in that home,
I think,
just to make it really work. Right.
Right. Yeah. I think with the right person, he'll be fine. It's just finding the right person for him.
Sure.
You have to be dedicated to, again, continuing his exercise, because he had like a year of pent-up energy.
Yeah.
Imagine a star athlete not being able to do anything for a whole year.
Sure.
And just being confined to a small area.
Yeah.
So if the person... whoever adopts him and they continue his exercise and training, I mean, already he does very well on sit commands. He's, as you could see, he's very food motivated. He listens. He really listens very well.
He's smart.
He's very, very smart. And he does want to please. So those are all great attributes.
For sure.
So
yeah, he'll settle into a home in no time if everybody kind of knows the history and is prepared
Absolutely.
To sort of do the work.
Yeah, we're looking for an adult home for him.
So. And I should mention that a couple times this week, including this morning, there's pictures of Chip on the Talking Animals Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, I think on the community WMNF page. And then today when they came in, we've posted fresh pictures that we actually captured here in the studio. So if you're curious to see what Chip looks like, you can go to Facebook in any number of places and take a gander. So and sorry, how old do you say Chip
he's
is now?
He'll be 2 years old. We actually know his birth date. He's got a birthday coming up April 2nd.
Okay, cool. So let's hope that Chip and others, as a byproduct of this conversation today, might find foster home. And again, if somebody's ready to give him a forever home, so much the better.
Yeah, and all our dogs are brought up to date on shots. He's been fully vetted, so he's been neutered, which also may help bring him to
little,
where he needs to be.
A little calmer.
Make the brain function a little better for him.
Cool. So let's meet Snoopy.
Well, Snoopy came to us out of Orange County Shelter in Orlando. We get pleas all the time in our emails. And I believe Susan spotted her first. We have a foster waiting for her, who unfortunately has had a medical emergency.
Oh.
So Tony has stepped in for us. He seems to be the guy. What I really know about her is what was on the basic bio, which was she's an energetic dog. She was an owner surrender. She likes people. She likes dogs. She likes cats, I believe, too. Yeah. So she's a good girl.
She seems very
and
sweet.
She's about a year old, I think.
She's 6 years old.
Oh, six. Okay. Wow. Sorry.
Okay.
Didn't read that part.
Well, you just chimed in there, Susan, and how Pat explained that you kind of spotted her first. How do you guys sort of track with all the shelters? And again, you've mentioned that it spans multiple states. I mean, how do you track Dalmatians that would need to be sort of swooped in and pulled out like Snoopy was and others have been? And how wide a net can you cast for that, just given time and resources and other things?
Well, a couple of things I'd like to say. For one thing, we've been around for so long that a lot of shelters are familiar with us. And so when they get a Dalmatian or anything that looks vaguely familiar like a Dalmatian, they will email us. We also go out and look at Pet Harbor and Pet Tango, which are two places where shelters list their dogs that need homes. And then we will start a conversation with them. As Pat pointed out, we get pleas every single day from shelters all over. You know, please save this one, please save that one.
Right.
When we first started, we were rescuing. You can look at our numbers on our website, but we were rescuing 95 dogs a year. Now we're down to 35 dogs a year, which is what we took in last year. And it's getting less than that. So, you know, Mary Ellen has been awesome, and so has Tony, in stepping up to foster for us all the time. Pat can because of her own animals at home. But
I did.
You know, they brought up the only way that we are going to continue. We have been very blessed with financial resources and a good database. We have like 670 people on our support list. So we have the financial means to help these dogs, but we have to have foster homes to continue to save any dog. And as you've talked to Mary Ellen and Tony, fostering is not always easy. Sometimes you get a perfect dog. More often than not, the dog will have a few things that you need to work with, because you have to remember, these dogs were either taken from a loving home and all of a sudden found themselves in a shelter, or I don't know if this is worse or better, they were dumped on the street and taken from the street by animal control to the shelter. And if you've been in a shelter, shelters are very noisy, very stressful. The dog's immune systems go down. They catch diseases. They catch kennel cough. So it's a very, very stressful situation. So you have to, when you are going to foster, you have to remember that you have to give this animal time. I used to work at the SPCA in Clearwater. Well, it's in St. Pete. And we always told people you have to give the dog at least 60 to 90 days to settle in, because, you know, they need to feel, just like a foster child is moved from home to home, they need to feel secure again. And it's going to take them a while to feel like that. So fostering isn't necessarily always easy, but it is very, very rewarding. And that, you know, you saved a life. And usually you make friends with the people that you adopt to. And sometimes they keep in touch for a long time. And you've got the pleasure of knowing that, you know, you have made not only a dog happy, but you've made a family very happy.
Well, let me remind folks who may just be tuning in now. This is Talk Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Susan Weber, founder of Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay, speaking to us by phone. Here in the studio, I'm joined by her colleagues, Pat Hose, Tony Wyatt, Mary Ellen Woska, and two sweet Dalmatians, Chip and Snoopy, who are looking for foster homes or ideally
forever homes.
Yeah. So I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. The fact that you are speaking by phone, Susan, does make me want to ask sort of one distinctive trait of Dalmatian Rescue Tampa Bay, a Tampa-based organization with Tampa in its name, is that you run it from Tucson, Arizona. How did that come about?
So I'm going to say that I'm a halfback, which I'm sure you've heard that.
Okay.
My ex-husband and I left with 17 dogs loaded up into a van, 17 old dogs that nobody wanted. He actually got a job as a paramedic out on Orcas Island, Washington State.
Mm.
So we moved across the country with the dogs. Rescued some more out there, and unfortunately, the stress and strain of rescue is very common for people to end up divorced.
Yeah.
because it is a very, very stressful life. So I had family in Tucson. Instead of going all the way back to Florida, I decided to come halfway back and stop in Tucson. And I've kind of just made a little life out here. I've been here for 4 years now. I got a job, and, you know, so I come back to Florida twice a year for fundraisers, and I have family there.
I got you.
Like I said, I've got such a good, Pat, Mary Ellen, Tony. I mean, we're not just a rescue. I feel like we've kind of made a family. Sure. And one of the most rewarding things for me has not only been saving all the dogs, but seeing the volunteers become friends with each other, and that has been just as rewarding. They help each other out. They, you know, they're there for each other, and I just think that's awesome.
It sounds like you've really kind of figured out a way to make it work, but at least initially, what were the challenges of running the Tampa operation from Tucson, at least in the beginning?
It's hard when I can't physically, well, actually, I missed being there. One of the most rewarding things to me was physically going to the shelter, even though it's hard, and taking the dog out and actually having that you know, bond. The hardest thing is that I can't see the dog. We have to rely on what the shelters tell us now. I used to go down and evaluate the dog. Now I have to rely on what the shelters tell us, which is not always. A lot of times they stretch the truth because they all want to save the dog. So they may tell us the dog is 2 years old when the dog is actually 10 years old. They may tell us the dog is good with, you know, other dogs when it actually hates other dogs. So I have to rely more on the shelters themselves. I can't physically be there. The other thing is it's hard, you know, by phone, it's hard to do the fundraising as much as I would like. Pat's done an awesome job of putting together our website. We have constant contact, so we send out a monthly newsletter. But it is harder because I used to be so much more involved physically there doing fundraisers, and I can't do that. But it's just amazing to me that we've been able to survive for as long as we have, doing it the way we are.
It's clear to Stephen, with the people I've met today, that you do have a network of great volunteers. So running it from a few states over seems to be working. We'll get into it again towards the end of the show, but let me just mention, too, the website for people who want to find out more about Dalmatian Rescue Tampa Bay or meet some of the dogs. That also they could be great candidates for foster or, again, forever homes. It's dalrescuetampabay.org. And, of course, there's also a Facebook page, which you can just find by searching for Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay. So, Mary Ellen, or actually Pat and Mary Ellen, and if Tony were back, I'd probably ask him too. But I'm always interested, regardless of the specifics, of people who do a lot of fostering. Because I think a lot of people feel like, well, if I'm going to adopt a dog or a cat or whatever, I'm going to adopt. But right. To foster and then have them for X amount of months or whatever the period might be, and then hand them over emotionally and otherwise would be just too difficult. So can you describe a little bit of how that works and how you have gotten maybe acclimated to it?
Absolutely. The reason why I first started to foster was because I had just lost my Dal. I actually had a mixed breed that had a lot of Dal qualities and looked Dalmatian. And it was a really strong bond, and I just wasn't ready to make that full-time commitment, and I was still kind of grieving in a sense. So I thought, well, I could foster, and I'm one of the few people probably that do not already have another dog and an empty household. And so I was able to make that commitment as far as if the dog needed additional attention for training.
That was Liberty, right?
Yes, Liberty was the first. So in my mind, I thought, I'll do this for a year.
Famous last words, I'm guessing, by the laugh.
And then I'll adopt a dog.
Sure.
So I think 20 dogs later and about almost 4 years later, I actually fell in love with one of the dogs that I kept saying was the best foster I ever had in the whole wide world, a purebred Dalmatian with a big personality, but a really sweet dog that I adopted to a Disney exec who had a lot of property and horses, and also two other large male dogs. And the other dogs were really not accepting him, and it just wasn't working out. Okay. So they called me, and it was the first dog I ever had returned to me. I couldn't believe it. And I kept saying it was the best one I ever had. So with that being said, I think it was destiny. And so I did adopt that dog whose name was Clinton. And Clinton was a great mascot for us as well. He even did some PSAs with the fire department, some photo shoots. He was great on, we could put him on a fire truck and have kids take photos with him. I mean, he was just a really great, gentle.
Oh, cool. Had the temperament kind of, yeah.
Perfect temperament, yeah. Big ham bone, really mm-hmm. liked the actual tension. So he was just a great dog. So unfortunately, Clinton has passed away about 6 months ago.
Sorry.
And so again, not quite ready to adopt yet.
Yeah.
Taking a little time. And they called me and asked me if I could help out with Chip. And so I am hoping that we could actually find another foster home. I will keep Chip until we find the appropriate place for mm-hmm. him. But I do have a new job now that demands a lot of my time.
Okay.
And so like I said, a perfect scenario would be either someone to foster him or someone who is willing to adopt him. And I'd be happy to work with them, or perhaps we'll even have a trainer work with them. But as you can see, he's pretty well behaved.
Yeah.
He sits well, very treat motivated. So it's easy to get him to do things with treats. He just needs some time to acclimate. I've only had him for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the environment that he's come from, he's actually is doing very, very well.
Oh, that's
so he's
great.
A great dog. Yeah.
Very good. And so it sounds like from what you said, you're about 20 dogs into fostering. I guess back to my question. Let's say the first two, maybe three dogs.
Mm-hmm.
How was that whenever that stint was up and the forever home was?
Well, I often get that question. How can you give them up? You know, especially when you spend time and you love them and you spend the time with them and they're part of your home and your family. And my answer is always sometimes I'm not the right person for the dog because everybody's lifestyle is different. I've had dogs. My first dog was an older dog and she was a couch potato and that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to hang out on the couch. I like to walk. I like to be in the community. I like to bring my dogs with me. So she wasn't active enough to really fit my lifestyle. So I found someone that was perfect for, she had another older dog and that's what she wanted the dog for, to just hang out and watch TV on the couch, which was perfect. The second dog I got was a young dog, very active, ridiculously smart, very easy to train. It was a Dall cattle mix, and we actually had multiple applications for the dog, but I knew she was high energy and I knew she needed to be in a home that recognized that and was willing to continue to exercise her. And we met the perfect family that I often joke, and I'm still good friends with them, and I often joke and say, I wish you had adopted me, because they had acreage, they had horses the dog runs with, they wanted a dog that was very active and can fit in their family lifestyle, they take the dog often for boating,
I'd like
away,
to get in on
camping.
That family
I know,
as well.
They take
yeah.
them camping. They live on open water. The dog swims every morning. Like I said, I'm
wow.
like, man.
Some
yeah.
of our dogs live far better
so
than we do.
It's
yeah.
true. So, and again, great people, great family. It was just the perfect fit for that dog and perfect lifestyle. So that's what it is. With fostering, you have an opportunity to assess the dog's personality and get an idea of what they're like and what would be better suited for
yeah.
them. Some dogs really want to be with children. They love kids and want to be in that family atmosphere. I don't have children, so it would be a better fit to be with them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sure.
To be with kids.
And
so.
It's really great that it sounds like, again, it's not just a sort of way station before they get adopted,
but
really sussing out the dog and saying,
sure.
okay, here's kind of the home, mm-hmm. ideally, we could place this dog in, and this maybe wouldn't work so well based on what I've been able to burn
yeah.
my time with this dog. So, yeah. Well, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, but Susan, any last detail we want to mention before we, and again, want to remind people, the website is DAL, D-A-L, Rescue, TampaBay.org, and again, you can search on Facebook for Dalmatian Rescue of Tampa Bay to find their Facebook page. But anything else, Susan, before we have to say goodbye?
Well, again, I want to thank you for having us on. Please, if anybody is out there and they're willing to foster, we are more than willing to. We've got a lot of experienced volunteers. You've seen three of them in the studio. We're more than willing to walk them through what it takes to be a foster. We'll handhold them through the experience. We'll tell them up front, you know, what to expect. We do cover all the costs, all the medical costs, while they are fostering the dog. So if anybody can foster a dog, sometimes they go very quickly into a home. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. We try to make a good match. We try to pull the best dogs we can. But if anybody's willing to foster, please have them call one of us. Get a hold of us through our website. There's an adoption foster application. I'm sorry. If you go to our website and it says Foster Dal, and if you click on that on the left hand side, it will bring up an application. It will come to myself and Sherry, one of our other members, and we will call them and talk about it.
That's great. Well, our thanks to Susan Weber, Pat Hose, Tony Wyatt, Mary Ellen Waska, Chip, and Snoopy. And thanks for all your great work. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having us.
You bet.
Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. In a few moments, I'll chat briefly with Detective Roxanne Hunt of the Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association about its Bark in the Park and Pinellas event coming up this Saturday at Freedom Lake Park. Toward the end of the program, by the way, also as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see the Go-Go's Farewell Tour at the Capitol Theater on August 2nd. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. This is Sean Donnelly with a piece called I Love My Bulldog in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I kind of have a kid now. We have an English Bulldog. Do you guys know what that is? English Bulldog? Yeah. If you know what an English Bulldog is, those are dogs that are really fat and they're low to the ground. They have breathing problems. They go, arr, arr. I just got the dog version of myself. That's basically it. I just wanted something else unhealthier than me in my house. I don't know if you know this, but Bulldogs, English Bulldogs, they're very stubborn dogs. Did you know that? They like to pull you when you want them. And I spend all day with my dog, so sometimes I forget my dog's a dog, and I talk to him like he's a human. You've ever been a dog? You know what I'm talking about? And the other day, I'm walking him, and he's pulling me, and I get so upset. And out of nowhere, I just yell out, I go, you think you call the shots? Well, you don't. I call the shots. And then he pooped. And then I picked it up. I was like, all right, you definitely call the shots. If you're in a relationship with somebody and you pick up their poop, they call the shots in that relationship. I love my dog so much. I wish he was human. He'd be the coolest guy in the world if he was human. He'd be the kind of guy, he could crash his car, he wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? Do you know how many times I've hit my dog in the head with a door? And he's just like, yeah, it's totally cool, don't worry about it, I love you. Let's go do something else, we'll go to a diner. I don't care, I love you, it's me and you. You can't do that with cats. Let's face it, everybody, cats are dicks, okay? It's true, cats are dicks, I hate cats. Yeah. If cats were human, they would just be like your really uptight, skinny friend, Beth. That you can't say the word moist around, you know what I'm saying? That's why you have cat people. You need cat people. There's only two types of people in this world, cat people and gun people. Because a lot of people don't like those two things. There's no other animal that has a group of people associated with it. There's no lizard ladies. Right? There's no lonely women in their apartments with lizards knitted on their sweaters. Also, why is that? Why is the cat the symbol animal for the lonely woman? So everywhere in the world's ignoring you, so you get the one animal in the world's gonna ignore you as well?
That was Sean Donnelly with a piece called I Love My Bulldog, taken from his CD, Manual Labor Face. Let's move now into our conversation with Detective Roxanne Hunt of the Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association. Indeed, let's welcome Detective Hunt to Talking Animals right now. Good morning, Detective Hunt.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So first, maybe you could just sort of briefly explain what the Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association is and maybe describe briefly its mission.
Absolutely. The Pinellas Park Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association, that's a big word, I got to tell you,
yeah,
was started in around 1999. And the purpose of it is to increase citizens' knowledge of law enforcement and support the police department and the community. So to bring together the community and the police. We utilize many facets of that, and they work alongside the police explorers. Police explorers are freshmen, high school freshmen to seniors, and they work volunteer hours here at the police department. The CPAAA, and that's what I call it for short,
okay,
is a nonprofit organization, and it is, while it is separate from the police department itself, we work closely together on different missions. different events, which include Holiday in the Park, and now, of course, our annual Bark in the Park, which is coming up on its sixth year.
So I think that's the perfect opening to address a little bit more about Bark in the Park. So what is its purpose, Detective Hunt?
Well, we utilize the Bark in the Park to fund and assist our canine unit. We have three canines that are assigned to Pinellas Park, three canine officers. We love our canines, and we hopefully will continue to be able to afford and raise money to help equip the canine officers with bulletproof vests, medical funds, and also understand that when we had previous canines, when they retire from the police department, we still try to take care of those canine as well.
So that's a lot of resources there that you need to keep funding, I guess. Yeah. So, well, let's talk about details for Bark in the Park, specifically, I guess, when, where, time, etc.
Absolutely. Right now, the Bark in the Park is scheduled for this Saturday. That's April 2nd. It is scheduled to take place at Freedom Lake Park, which is in Pinellas Park on 49th Street. We invite all citizens, anybody from the area to come out. The purpose, of course, is to get education for animals and to hopefully find a furry friend to take home with you. These are all rescued animals from the area. And many, many vendors. Currently, we have about 30-plus that are coming out to this event. The event takes place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Right now, there's probably a little bit of percentage of rain, so we're looking at a possible rain date. But as of right now, it is still scheduled to take place on the 2nd.
And is there a website or Facebook page where people could not only get more information beyond what we have a chance to chat about briefly here today, but also kind of keep an eye on whether or not it might be postponed to another day because of the rain?
Absolutely. We're currently looking at the 19th, just to throw a date out there. So that would be April 19th. But I'm going to give you a couple of websites here that people can reference.
Okay.
The first one is the alumni website. And again, that's the Citizens Police Academy Alumni Association website. That's www.pinellasparkcpaaa.org.
Mm-hmm.
Their website can also be accessed easily through the City of Pinellas Park's website, www.pinellas-park.com. The events section that's on the main page of the website can easily take you to the event Bark in the Park.
Great. So either way, you can get there and get updates and find out more. And again, there's beyond the adoption and the vendors you mentioned, I think there's music and barbecues and
there will be
door
games,
prizes and, yeah,
food, door prizes to be had by all.
I invite
everybody to come down and enjoy some time with us, getting to know our police officers, our CPAAA members, and our police explorers.
Great. Well, Detective Hunt, thanks for making the time to join us. We'll keep our fingers crossed that the weather cooperates, and if not, that people can go to accessing either way one of those website locations and find out about the new rain date if it is indeed postponed.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful day.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see the Go-Go's Farewell Tour at the Capitol Theater on August 2nd. Right now, it's time for a few animal news and announcements. Want to remind you that exams are back at the Animal Coalition of Tampa. So if your dog's not feeling well, your cat has the sneezes, come see us, they say. Call 813-250-3900 to book your appointment. And walk-ins are also accepted. Appointments, though, of course, are preferred. So shot clinic hours are Monday through Saturday, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can find out more by actampa.org. Also, Meow Now is a Pinellas County organization which supports and implements TNVR programs for community cats. TNVR is Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return. And they've got a big event coming up April 8th in Ozona to help fund the operation. You can go to meownowflorida.org to find out more and to RSVP. It's going to be held at Antiques and Uniques in the Garden Courtyard, 303 Orange Street in Ozona. Sixth annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale is on the horizon as well to benefit homeless and feral cats. That's going to be Saturday, April 16th at Mojo Books and Records. And so you can go to Facebook and just search for the annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale. And maybe you'd like to help out and bake some vegan goods or just attend or find out more information. You can all do all that at our Facebook page. And as you might remember, 3 weeks ago, our guest was Darcy Dennett, the director of The Champions, a documentary tracking the pit bulls rescued from the Michael Vick dogfighting ring and widening out to explore other topics within the realm of pit bull dogs, including myths and misconceptions, history, breed discrimination, legislation, and more. Well, at that time, there wasn't a movie screening slated for the area, but now there is. Monday, May 2nd at AMC West Shore 14, 210 West Shore Plaza at 7:30, there will be a screening of The Champions. It is one of those tug screenings, which means a certain number need to commit or buy tickets in advance, otherwise the screening does not go forward. So you can search for Tug. You can go to tug.com and search by the city, or go to championsdocumentary.com and search for it that way for, again, the screening on May 2nd in Tampa. So that's all we have time for today. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. This is Duncan Strauss. It's Talking Animals. Show website is talkinganimals.net. So this is a giveaway, Name That Animal Tune, and please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. Again, there'll be a prize, a pretty fabulous prize, a pair of tickets to see the Go-Go's Farewell Tour at the Capitol Theater, August 2nd. To the first person to call is 813-239-9663. Correctly identifies this animal song. It's a bit of a give-me. I sort of played a different version early in the show. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We'll take those calls off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lawyer is up next with Radioactivity. Tune in next Wednesday at 10 a.m. for another edition of Talking Animals. Thanks for listening today. Take care. NPR News headlines coming up momentarily.